Have you ever wondered what it means to build with intention? Well, I'm Matt, and with my co-host Hamish, we are dedicated to pushing boundaries and building better homes. So we welcome you to join us on the Mindful Builder podcast, where we are committed to driving positive change in the building industry by surrounding you with experts in their field and being open about our lives as builders. So join us on this mindful journey of construction by subscribing to the Mindful Builder podcast. Please note that all advice provided here is general in nature and may not apply to every individual situation. It is important to consider your unique circumstances and consult with relevant professionals or experts for tailored guidance. Use this advice as a starting point for reflection and exploration, and always trust industry professionals when making decisions.
Firstly, who are you? Because I think it's an important part, because you're in the area that we, in the space we operate in, you're kind of a big deal, and you're one of the innovators in this space to pull it to where it is now.
I would love to be known as the godfather of Passive House.
Okay, Harley is the godfather of Passive House. Is it the fourth certified building in Australia?
Well, at the time, there were no Passive Houses when I was building mine. None. I wanted to be the first, but I just got beaten right at the post there.
Like the dawn.
Yeah.
So your background is not, you're in public service for a while, or a consultant?
So I trained as an engineer.
Yeah, okay.
So before I went into the construction industry, I was a public servant. I was in Canberra. I was working for the...
Well, you could have just said you're in Canberra and we just assumed that you're in public
service. Yeah, everyone there is a public servant. Yeah. A fat cat.
Yeah.
I was one of those fat cats.
Yeah.
What's a fat cat?
You don't know what a fat cat is?
No idea.
It's a public servant who has a really easy job. They're paid well. They don't do a lot of work. But look, I did a lot of work. But in
every public services, I work so hard. I work from 9 to 5.
Yeah, I know a lot of public servants in Canberra, so I'm not going to cast aspersions on anyone.
But I was highly ambitious. I was working for the Department of Defence at the time. I liked the work, but then something changed my path. It happens to us all sometimes. I don't know. Maybe you guys...
Dude, we literally just had this conversation with our guest beforehand that was exactly like this. So carry on. This is super interesting.
So I was like a project manager working in a team with software developers, complete opposite of what you do in the building industry, right? But it was a team environment. It was about getting stuff done, having processes in place, optimizing things. So I really loved that job. But then an opportunity came up where I could build a house. Now, it's rare these days that people can actually build houses because they're so expensive. But at the time, it was affordable. I bought land, and from the start, I wanted to build something very comfortable because I'd grown up in a really, really badly insulated house.
Were you always in Canberra?
I've been here 45 years. I was not born here.
Yeah.
I came from a country that was had a very nice weather. It was probably like 20 to 28 degrees year round. It's Vietnam, right?
Yeah.
Coastal Vietnam. I came here after...
Whereabouts in Vietnam in the coast?
So it's in the central part. It's a small fishing village called Quy Nhơn. And I don't remember. I left it when I was 3. But I think my DNA remembers it. That
you can actually live in a warm, comfortable climate.
I was born in a warm, comfortable climate. I want that. I want that. And when I came here, I came to Canberra.
Warm, comfortable climate.
Canberra, in the middle of a winter, as a refugee... To settle in Canberra in the middle of winter, I mean, if I was an older person, I would have said, send me back.
It's torture.
Send me back, right? And yeah, and we lived in a house, a typical Canberra house, brick veneer. These days would be considered a zero-star energy rated house. Zero-star.
Filled with Mr. Fluffy insulation?
Probably filled with Mr. Fluffy insulation. No. No insulation.
Okay.
Was Mr. Fluffy just like a blow-in insulation?
No, Mr. Fluffy, this is, I don't know if we can, well, I mean, we can because everyone knows about it. So Mr. Fluffy insulation used to spray in asbestos.
Oh, I didn't, yeah, okay, yeah.
Ridden fibrous insulation.
Is that the stuff they had in the Wizard of Oz that they used to spray to make it look like snow?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so about 1,000 Canberra houses had that sprayed into their roofs. Yep. And it cost...
Massive government buyback. Yeah, anyway.
Was that a government incentive at the time?
Yeah, so eventually I did buy a house, our very first house, and it was an old house, about 50 years old, and also similar levels of comfort. You buy whatever you can afford. as a first home buyer, you just buy whatever you can afford. You can't, as a first house, buy your dream house.
No.
So we only had $250,000. I mean, that was the amount that we could borrow from the bank. And that was enough to buy a house in the old days. This is going back a few years. And that house was, I'd say, even more uncomfortable than the house that I, the very first house that I moved to. It had so many air leaks, evaporative cooling, very little insulation. And all the while, I was thinking, this is not right. This doesn't feel right. And everybody else's house was the same. I thought, I can't stand this. I'm going to look for a job in Brisbane to escape the Canberra weather. And every winter I would go on to seek.com and look for work. So then we had the opportunity to actually buy a block of land and build a house that was unlike any of these rubbish houses in Australia. And I've been to display homes. I've been to a lot of these show houses that are considered state of the art, and they look beautiful. They've got our fresco dining. They've got large windows, all the latest kinds of tiles and finishes. And yet they're all the same. They're all built like tents. So for my house, I went on the internet, and at the time, passive house was not a thing. This is going back 12 years ago. This passive house was not a thing in Australia yet. The Passive House Association, I don't think it even had started, or if it did, it was in its infancy. There were no passive house consultants back then. There were no passive house builders. No one was talking about this. There was the usual solar passive stuff, plenty of that. I wanted something that was guaranteed. I didn't want to do something that might work. So I went on the internet. As you do your research, you Google it, and there's a massive amount of open source information from the Passive House Institute overseas in Germany, right? Found all this information. And at first glance, I thought, oh, you've got to build like 1 meter thick walls. Nah, not for me. I just ignored it. Then I circled back and then I read it closely. And it turns out you don't have to build 1 meter thick walls. You build the walls to suit your climate. It's climate dependent. And that's when the light bulb went off. Ah, Passive House. We can build it to suit the Canberra climate, and it's going to be as comfortable as any other house, any other passive house in the world.
And you've got a perfect, well, in my opinion, I've always thought that there's some amazing opportunities to branch into Canberra because you have incredibly cold winters and very hot summers. You've got these massive swings in temperature. It can go from like -5 to +45. And your buildings need to stay within that 20 to 25 degrees. So I am curious to understand what was the wall build-ups that you needed to achieve certification in Canberra?
Yeah, well, yeah, Canberra's cold. -8 is the coldest I remember.
What?
-8.
Cold.
Cold, man.
-8.
And it's clear, like, you're like
those drafts in those leaky house must just, that would be like blowing an ice machine on you.
It's next level, yeah. And the gas heater is blowing hot air, ducted gas heating is blowing hot air onto your head. So your head's really hot and your feet are freezing. And the summers, yes, they are, I remember, I think 47 degrees or something.
That's just part of life there. That's just how it is. That's probably common thought.
That's how it is. And people are living in uninsulated houses in that kind of climate. And so they are solely dependent on the heater being on and them being right in front of the heater. Because the heater cannot heat the whole house. You've got to be right in front of it.
It's like my house at home at the moment. Like, it was only 5 degrees this morning, but the gas heater heats the living room. You step into the hallway and you're like, oh, fuck, get back in. But then you go back into that room and it's so hot that you can't stay in that room because it's too hot. So you kind of like turn the heater off. It gets cool and you're like, oh, got to get that back on. And
the heat doesn't stay though.
No, it just goes in 2 minutes.
You turn it off, and it's gone.
And like, heat is not just heat. There's a quality to good heat. Like, it's good and bad heat.
Yeah.
Good heat is, it's like a warm hug.
You don't even notice it, sort of thing.
Yeah. It's like every surface of the room is the same temperature. You just walk in. It's like you're back in the womb.
Yeah.
That's the heat that I wanted.
Do you know what? There's a really great marketing opportunity. What does passive house feel like?
Being back in the...
Feels
like...
Ask
my child and Stewie, like, any day now.
Because it's consistent heat, right? So I was down in Tassie last week at Matt O'Grady's place, open house, and I was down there with Justin and a few of the other sort of usual suspects down there. And I don't live in a passive house, but I've been in plenty, right? Stayed over in plenty of passive houses before. Good friends of ours who we built up in Kyneton's got a passive house. Like, you can't explain what it's like to be in a passive house. You've got to feel it for yourself. And you obviously live in it. So how does it feel now? I mean, you've been in there for a long time, like one of the first passive houses in Australia. Comparing your lived-in experience now to what it was when you were a kid and even in your first home, like, can you explain some of the differences? Like, do you get sick much? How do you sleep? Like, all of those
things. How's improved your lifestyle?
How's improved your life, yeah.
It's unbelievably good. I feel so privileged to be able to live in that house. And when we go on holidays, we go to the beach. Like, Canberra's 3 hours from the ocean. When you go to the beach, you book into an Airbnb or someone's house and you stay. And then you then appreciate, home feels so good because this house here is drafty and cold and you have to have the fireplace going. So the house, thermally, it is fantastic. It's always warm without the heater. But we do use the heater on days where you have long runs of cold days without the sun. It's solar driven. You need that sunlight to keep it warm. But you're not hearing the heater because it's on the lowest setting and it's only on for a couple of hours, right? So the difference between having a house that's naturally warm compared to one that's relying on this air being forced into every room, your eyes don't dry out.
It's almost like it's so cold and then the heat is so good from the heater, but it's still so uncomfortable. Like, you're not comfortable.
Yeah.
I find that's what I'm experiencing at the moment. Like, you crave the warm, but you go in there, but you're just icky.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But in a passive house, it's the opposite icky. It's just shorts and t-shirts. You're wearing summer clothes when it's winter. At night, though, I must say, it can be, ironically, a bit too warm sometimes, even in the colder seasons.
What's your house sit at?
What's that?
What degree does your house sit at?
It's mostly at 20 degrees, but like the coldest it's ever been, it's like 18 degrees without the heater.
That's still warm.
During winter, right, like we live in a shitty 1970s uninsulated home at the moment, and I actually quite like going to bed because we've got two doonas on and you're snuggled in, and I actually really like getting right under the doona. But I've been up to our friend's house in Kyneton a few times during the middle of winter, and you've got a sheet on, and I'm like, this feels weird right now because my body's so used to wanting to be really tucked up in the blanket.
I'm so excited for mine.
I agree that it feels good to have weight on your body. Like, you need a thick doona, that weight, that feeling of being wrapped up, you know.
When back in the womb, like you said.
Back in the womb.
Well, when babies are born, there's a term when you wrap them up with a cloth, swaddling.
Like a burrito.
That's it. And so in the bedroom, sometimes we keep the blinds, the external blinds closed during the colder seasons to keep that room colder, to make it about, you know, 18 degrees or so.
Interesting.
So you actually, that's actually.
I'm trying to make my house colder in winter.
And so that's your first passive house.
Yes.
And at that point then, because how I know you is Logic House Windows, were you in the window industry at that point then, or was it then building your first passive house? You're like,
what windows do you have in your house?
PVC German-made windows. At the time, I imported those windows. So I got a local company to import those windows.
Yeah.
So I had a builder to build the house, but I was heavily involved in getting everything together.
And was your builder on board?
Well, one of them was German heritage.
Because I'm like, this was how long ago? 2000?
It's 12 years ago,
2015.
So we got certification 2014, got certified. So the building started around about 2012, 2013.
And then at that point, you finish, you're like, I can import windows.
So just the process of getting the windows, you have to look around, and there's a lot of rubbish windows out there, okay?
Yes.
A lot of rubbish windows.
What do you define as rubbish? This is a good question.
Aluminium windows. So before I built that passive house, I was living in a house that had steel casement windows, single glaze, really bad windows. And admittedly, at that time, I took those windows out and put in new windows.
Yeah.
And I was so uneducated back then. I took out steel single glazed windows and put in double glazed, thick aluminium, non-thermally broken windows.
Yeah.
I was trying to fix a condensation problem by replacing windows with double glazing because I thought, double glazing, they've got to be good. Yep. And you know what? The condensation didn't go away.
Yeah. Yep, and probably worse because aluminium is a much bigger conductor of heat energy than steel.
I think the mold got worse. The frames got more moldy than the steel.
Yeah.
And at that point, I said, next time I've got to actually do things properly and dig into the science, do things properly. And so when I did the passive house and those PVC windows, there's no condensation anymore. And then that passive house, you know, I built this passive house without ever going into one. I didn't know what I was getting into.
That was like my first passive house.
Wow.
And then for the...
Yeah, but he built one for himself.
No, this is what I'm crazy. Yeah, I know, but this is what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I've got a comment here and I'll get to it quickly before you keep going. Yeah. It's like, what we need to understand quickly is like, Harley paved the way for what we do now.
Yeah.
100%. Like, he made the mistakes so we can have our life very easy in the way we build now. We still look like we're at the front creating all these new amazing things. The reality is Harley had to do it for us first.
Father Harley,
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I couldn't really follow someone else locally. I mean, there were lots of overseas examples, but it's different. When you build stuff overseas, the products are different, the wall build-up's different. But that first moment when I realised that once we had all the windows in and everything was closed up and you walk in and it's cold outside and it's so nice inside, everyone remembers their first time in a passive house, I think.
Living in one? Or
being like, do you remember your first time?
It's quiet.
I remember, actually, it's not my first time. What I remember distinctly was we had just wrapped the whole outside. We had put the roof on. We inside it, put our Intello windows were in. And we're walking around in shorts and T-shirts in the middle of winter. And it was fucking freezing outside. And I just come back from Thailand. So I was like, this is beautiful weather, back to reality of cold. And I'm like, this works instantly. I remember doing a blower door test that next week and being like, oh my God, this actually, this isn't some made up thing that's woo woo.
And this is before that people have been living in the house.
Yeah, this is just during.
None of the
construction site's more comfortable than my own home.
Yeah.
So imagine that happening to you. And then you think, wow, this, once people realize that this is possible, everyone's going to want one of these. Mm-hmm. Everyone's going to want a passive house. And the job that I was doing at the time, I was in public service, I was working for defence, and it was a noble job. The thing that it was classified, but the things we were doing, they were making a difference. And yet I thought getting into the building industry to build passive houses was a better cause.
Wow. Well,
it's almost defence. Like, it's ironic.
I'd actually love to know what you were doing.
Yeah. It's actually ironic. Like, it was defence. You're now defending the home from the outside. Inside.
It was defense intelligence. Okay, so
I really want to know.
Carry on.
Can't talk about it. But I
on record anyway.
I quit that job. It was a permanent job. You don't get fired as a public servant unless you break the law, right?
And that's still argumentative.
Yeah. So I had a cushy job. I thought, this. Do I want to spend the rest of my life doing this? Even though it was good cause, I thought, this is a golden opportunity. Let's change careers. Let's do something completely different. So I changed. I quit, and then I did what I thought would be the good place to start as a consultant, as a passive house consultant. I got qualified as a passive house consultant, not by doing any course or any exam. There's a pathway to get qualified by doing a passive house, building a passive house and doing all the calculations for the PHPP and getting that building certified.
Interesting.
So I did.
So you, as a tradesperson, we can do that, but you can do that as a designer as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is a better method, in my opinion. We don't go down that path anymore. But yes,
I'd argue that doing an exam that takes whatever 2 hours or whatever, however many hours is probably easier than building your own passive house and doing all the calculations is months, if not years, of work.
But how much more does it sink?
This is my issue. I'm going to say it. That course sucks. It doesn't teach you anything. I'm going to be really brutally honest. And we talk about this.
Just for the record, Matthew Carlin is now talking, not Hamish White.
Yep. So what we were going back at before in one of the previous conversations today is when we did the conversation and the teaching around Passive House, there was passion and...
Of course, when we did the course.
There was just so much enthusiasm. Now I feel like it's a tick box. And I feel like it's completely changed in the way that we're teaching people. And when it goes to why I loop back to that is like, we didn't do any PHPP training in the designer course whatsoever. And I feel like that's what I wanted to learn to know to improve our buildings, but I didn't get that. And I feel that's why I say you spending all those hours and actually logging the data made you learn properly.
Yeah, but look, not everyone can do that, though. I mean, let's be fair. I think the courses that are being provided out there, regardless of who you go through, are a nice gateway to get into the space. And then it's like when you do your carpentry apprenticeship, right? At the end of it, you're a carpenter. At the end of the Passive House Tradesperson course or designer course, you're a designer. But that's the beginning of your journey. That's the point where you actually start to learn, in my opinion, right? So you can do your course, a Passive House Tradesperson course, but it's not until you actually go and do one or two or three or four or five. That's when you actually become an expert.
Yeah, so same as when you learn to drive a car, you get your L's, right? But really, do you really know how to drive a car? You do, but while you're on your P's, those few years, you are learning, you're improving.
Yeah.
And after you're off your P's, you're way better. You're way better. You're a way safer driver. And so I absolutely agree that when you get that qualification, I think you do need to do work on some projects and then get into the trenches and get stuck into the details.
I don't think you should be able to call yourself a passive house architect, building designer, builder, consultant, unless you have a certified project. And I know I'm going off track here, but like that's how, yeah, as you go expertise, it's logging those hours.
Yeah.
Like the 10,000, they're saying 10,000 hours is what you need to do to become an expert in that field. Is that
But you've now done it, right? So you, in your own home, you did all of that stuff yourself.
Yep.
You know, it's real world experience. You're in the trenches, you're failing, you're learning, you're failing, you're learning, you're failing, you're learning in real time.
At your own expense.
Not so much failing though. I think being the very first house that I've actually built, okay. And at the time, I wanted to have the first passive house in Australia. To be a passive house, it has to meet the air tightness requirement. And so when you're doing it for the first time, it's like when you go to the moon. I think you want to over-engineer because you cannot fail when you go to the moon. You cannot fail if you're aiming to be the first passive house because I'm only going to build that house once.
Yeah. What did you get?
I over-engineered and I got the tightest house in Australia. 0.1 air changes an hour and 50.
So what blows me away, right? Like, and
I can't get that at a moment. We've got all the experience.
Like, I've done dozens more houses than you have, right? And I've never got that tight.
What did you do?
It's not what I used. It's the mindset. If you want to aim for something, the thing is, it's different when you're a builder. Your goal is to deliver to the client what the target is, 0.6 or better, at the best cost.
Yep.
You're not out there to break records unless you're someone like Drew Croker.
Well, I am right now at the moment trying to beat your record, and I can tell you I'm not there. I haven't done my last test, but like I've thrown a lot at this. And
that's what Sam said,
you? Yeah, no, but that's what I'm saying. Like that is an insane number.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, look, we don't want everyone to build that tight.
It's not needed.
Because it's not needed. But it's the same reason why, you know, like if I could do it, it means that most builders should be able to beat 0.6. That's the idea. You need one or two to aim high so that everybody else can then think, it must be doable. If Harley Truong, who was a software project manager from Defence, can get 0.1, then why can't I?
Do you know what? 0.6? When you're going for 0.1, 0.6 is easy.
I think 0.6
it's a mindset challenge.
I'm actually going to challenge anyone here. I actually think getting it, if you have an internal membrane, let's just specify that.
Oh, yeah.
If you're, or a SIPS, if you can't get under 0.6 air exchanges, you're doing something fundamentally wrong. I think it's just, again, it goes to mindset. If you go, that's my goal, I have to do it, you'll do it very easily.
So just circling back to how you got to, and we're kind of jumping all over the place here, but it's an interesting conversation. So 0.1 is super tight, right? Your windows must have been awesome, and your building I'm assuming that the leaks were potentially through the windows. Now, windows, let's just put things into context. When we say the windows are leaking, I'm doing this in inverted commas, right? There's such a micro amount of air moving through that. But windows leak because they've got hinges. It's really hard to get that 100% airtight. So your building fabric, your actual building fabric, not the windows, must have been like 100% airtight.
Yeah, very, very light. The airtight budget. Yeah, you allocate some leakage to the windows, to the walls, to the floor, to your junctions, to your penetrations. Everything leaks a little bit, right? But to get 0.1, everything's got to be super tight. So let's start with the walls, okay? So there are four airtight layers in the walls. Now, normally, you really only need one. You only need one, right? Because like in theory, like if you have an airtight thing, like a balloon, and you put it inside another airtight thing, another balloon, does it make it any more airtight? And then you put another balloon inside the other balloon inside the other balloon, so, yeah, which is what you did.
You had four balloons.
So, yeah, so but in reality, those balloons are not perfectly airtight. They're leaking a little bit.
Yeah.
So you put a balloon that's leaking a little bit into another balloon that's leaking a little bit, maybe a four times, it's okay. So my outside layer was a Proclima external wrap.
Yeah.
It was Mento.
Yep.
Next, on the inside of that, it was a SIPS house. So the outside layer was 15 millimeters OSB.
Did you tape all those as well on the penetration?
Yes, or the SIPs were, I had Sikaflex Pro on all the junctions, and I got RSI because I applied it all with a hand caulking gun.
Wow.
And they were taped as well. So on the outside, there's two airtight layers. On the inside, the inner SIPs was 15 millimeters of OSB, and they were all taped up and Sikaflex Pro'd as well. Okay. And then there was Intello on the inside of that. Okay. You don't do this. You don't,
unless you drew. As someone who's done a dozen or so SIPS projects, I have never done this.
Yeah, but that's only part of it. The main reason I got a good number, and these houses were small. They were 135 square meters, single story, three bedroom houses.
And just that makes that number even more incredible, because for context, like, the smaller the volume, the harder it is to get that really, really tight.
Correct.
Building.
The smaller the building is, the harder it is to get a good airtight number. Yes.
Yeah.
So the thing that made it easy was the shape of the house. It was a box.
Okay.
The form.
Yep. It was a box.
Yeah.
But it was a sexy box. Boxy sexy can box. Be beautiful. Boxy and beautiful.
So where does Logic House then come into this?
So as a consultant, I was then advising people how to build like this.
To build and sexy boxes.
Well, build whatever they wanted to build.
Yep.
And the first few clients, they weren't building sexy boxes. They were building very complicated.
Sexy boxes.
Complicated shaped houses.
Sexy boxes.
Yeah. And I felt frustrated because the way buildings are built here, it's so far from what you need to achieve a passive house. But on my project, it was dead easy. I had full control over everything. It was done my way. But on these other builds, you have to follow a certain process, and the consultant has no power. You're constrained because there's a limited budget. The house has to look a certain way. The products were not available.
Yeah.
The ones that were, maybe the client didn't like them or couldn't afford them. I found it frustrating for the first few projects, and I got a few certified over the line, but I thought there's got to be a better way to contribute to this industry, not as a consultant, but as something else. And I thought, well, as a consultant, I was recommending windows, and I had maybe one or two that I could recommend. And I thought, why don't I start doing windows? And as a consultant, you can't consult and recommend windows and sell windows. You do one or the other.
Yep.
You can't do both. It's a conflict of interest.
Yep.
So at one point I said, let's stop doing consulting and let's start doing products. And windows was at the top of the list, but it wasn't just windows. I wanted to supply all the product that we can't get in Australia. At the time, it was hard to get heat recovery ventilation systems. It was hard to get windows, and it was hard to get prefabricated wall systems. So the dream was to supply everything. I wanted to be the godfather of Passive House. There were the four companies that the prefabricated wall system, windows, ventilation, and membranes, right? Now, those companies, they do a lot of Passive House work, okay? And those are the products that people need to pull off a Passive House project.
Yep.
And all those companies, what they do is they have something in common. They import all of their products.
Yeah.
My windows come from Poland. The wraps come from Germany. The panels come from overseas, made in China. And some of it's CLT from Austria.
Yeah, I think the products are like the Canadian, it's Canadian pine.
Canadian OSB.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then you've got
the ventilation systems made in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
And look, we make no apologies that it's not Australian made. Now, the reason is we are leading the way. So as an individual, I was trying to lead the way by building a passive house. As a company, we are leading the way by importing products from the future. I think of it as we're going to Europe and we are getting what is bog standard over there and bring it over here. And it's like we are going 20 years into the future by doing that. Okay, I'm a time-traveling businessman. I've gone into the future 20 years. I've got something and I brought it back to our present day in Australia. And the clients love it. It's so futuristic compared to
the stuff that's available here, right?
If we don't use that as a reel, I don't know.
And but can I just touch on one important point? You created a market. And I feel at the moment there's so many people trying to jump on this market because it's a new shiny thing. You physically had to create a window market for awesome a market for awesome windows.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, there are other companies like me as well that have paved the way. Yeah, to import windows.
I'm going to challenge you back. That I think you are the reason why we're here.
Who else was there?
Yeah, there's no one else that has done it.
I mean, there are companies, but we service the passive house market the most. We've got a third of the certified passive houses have our windows in them. But if we're pioneers, good. But the idea is to not forever import windows. Ultimately, it would be great if we could grow this market so that everybody wants these kinds of windows, not necessarily ours.
Yeah.
If everybody wants double and triple glazed, airtight windows that are sexy, then that will create a market enough so that a local manufacturer can then start making them. And guess what? We are starting to make some of these.
Right? Yep, we are. You know, and I think what I love about that conversation that we were literally just having then was you're not trying to keep the market to yourself. You're not trying to be greedy. Like, I feel that you want everyone to succeed and you want everyone to build this way. The fact that you sell a market-leading window to the passive house market doesn't exclude the fact that you want other people to come into that market to provide other windows for a broader part of the community.
That's right. It's not a zero-sum game. If we can't win a job, we'll recommend one of our competitors.
Yeah.
Because we want the client to end up with a high-performance window.
It's no different to what we do as building.
Exactly.
Yeah. What we don't want is to say to the client, go get an AWS window or get something.
Yeah. Yeah.
I remember when I was sold some, I'm not going to say the company. I still remember the day they came out on site to my project in West Footscray and they sold the windows as like, oh, these ones might keep water out or you can get these ones that are pretty good. But might keep water.
Right.
Like that was like, oh, they're like, this is the basic we have. And I'm like, hold it. Like, what is wrong with, and I just then finished a passive house course being like, wait, what was that? I wish I had that time, that conversation post doing that course.
Oh yeah, we've got to stay clear of the cowboy companies.
Which is 99.9% of the window manufacturers in Australia.
Yeah.
So it's the reality.
I would love to keep chatting, but the reality is I need to go and get.
Well, we might do part two. Do you want to do part two tomorrow?
I reckon do part two.
And we'll touch on tomorrow more Logic House windows.
Yep, let's do that. Yep.
Happy with that?
Sounds good.
Yep, done. Great.